Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Massachusetts likes to boast about its high-tech and innovation economy, but here's a surprising stat. In the next decade, the state's manufacturing sector will have 100,000 jobs to fill and not enough skilled workers to fill them. So you'd think that Massachusetts vocational and technical schools form a ready pipeline to put well-prepared students into these good-paying jobs.
But a new study from Northeastern University Law School finds that there's a major bottleneck in Massachusetts voc tech schools. At least 3,500 students were unable to get into public vocational schools in the past 2 years, and the longest waiting lists were in communities with high unemployment and large minority populations.
So why is that? Especially when the demand is there from both students and employers. Is it a matter of funding, of priorities? Or, as some who point to the meltdown of Boston's Madison Park Vocational Technical School say, voc tech education simply isn't valued as much as it should be. So how do we strengthen these schools and bridge the gap between the students who yearn to learn 21st century technical skills and the Massachusetts businesses that want to and need to hire them? We're going to take a look at all of that today with Peter Enrich. He's a law professor at Northeastern University Law School, and he oversaw the new study. Professor Enrich, welcome to you.
Nice to be here.
Also with us today is Barry Bluestone, founding director of the Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy at Northeastern University. Barry, great to have you back on the show.
Always like to be here.
So listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Did you go to a vocational technical school? Are you a graduate of one? Did you try to get into one? What role do you think these schools should play in building the 21st century manufacturing economy, which, as we said, has 100,000 jobs to fill in the next 10 years? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So Peter Enrich, let's just start with you briefly. Can you tell us a little bit more about who you surveyed in terms of all of the vocational technical schools around the state and what you found specifically?
Sure. This is a study that it's one of a group of studies our first year students take on projects on behalf of various public interest groups around the country. This was done on behalf of an organization called Massachusetts Communities Action Network, which is a network of community organizing groups in communities around the Boston area. They had heard, particularly from their members in a couple of communities, about waiting lists in some voc schools. And so they asked us to look. How extensive is this problem? What's causing it? Are there legal remedies for it? And so that was the project we undertook. We surveyed all of the 60-some vocational schools in Massachusetts. We only received responses from about half of them. But what those responses showed, it was a mixed pattern. A number of schools have capacity that's underutilized, but a number of others, particularly, as you said, in low-income communities, had very long waiting lists. The schools we surveyed, and again, it was less than half of the schools in the state, had waiting lists of about 3,500. Since then, we've heard from more that have lengthened the list to about 4,500.
Okay. So why is it in places such as New Bedford, right? I'm looking at your stats right here. The Greater New Bedford Regional Vocational Technical High School has 513 people on the waiting list there.
Right.
And the unemployment rate in New Bedford is above 10%.
That's right. The reasons are complex. A lot of them come back to money. The funding of vocational schools is largely the responsibility of the state. They use a formula that has a couple of big problems with it. First problem is, in our view, it underestimates the cost of vocational education. And so the schools are short of money to start with. The second problem is, to determine how much money a school gets, they look at its enrollment in the previous year.
Uh-huh.
So if you had a waiting list last year, you're going to get funded based on how many students you had in the school. Pays no attention to your waiting list, so you're going to have exactly the same problem
so there's
year
no room
after
to grow.
Year after
yeah.
year. There's no allowance for growth in the funding formula.
Okay. So I want to dig in deeper into the specific challenges that vocational technical schools face in Massachusetts. But Barry Bluestone, before we do that, let's take a step back, because the real issue here is, one of the real issues, and what this makes us so compelling, is that, as we said in the introduction, these schools have an incredibly important role to play in the, it seems, burgeoning manufacturing sector in Massachusetts. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, we also did another study at Northeastern where we interviewed over 700 manufacturers. We surveyed more than 700 manufacturers throughout the state. And the number one issue they came up with was, how do we find replacement workers for those who are retiring? Because the average age of the manufacturing workforce in Massachusetts is now 51 years old.
Wow.
And therefore, they are desperate for these workers. What we found is that this is one industry, manufacturing, but there are a whole set of industries where we're not really preparing the correct workforce for the future. And I think part of it is, and Peter and I are both at Northeastern University, we're both professors, we've stressed so much college, university education to the extent that people think, if their kids don't go to college, if I don't go to college, I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, students coming out of vocational schools, in some of these schools, have 100% chance of getting a job when they graduate. They're getting good pay in the crafts, in manufacturing. But very few parents understand that. Very few guidance counselors understand that. And therefore, even politically, we haven't put enough pressure on the legislature and on the governor to expand the vocational education schools to make up for the difference.
So let's break down that ignorance a little bit. When we talk about these 21st century manufacturing jobs that these schools can be training students for, what are we talking about? What kind of jobs are they?
Well, we're talking about literally tens of thousands of openings to replace current workers. But the new jobs in manufacturing aren't like the jobs I worked on when I was on an assembly line at Ford, putting my way through college in the 60s, building carburetors. All of these folks are using high-tech equipment. They need to have mathematical skills. They need to have a lot of technical skills that we normally think of as college education. So that we still have manufacturing, but it's a very different type of manufacturing than we had 20 or 30 years ago, which requires very, very specialized skills.
Hmm. Peter Enrich, did part of your survey or study look at whether or not, I mean, we talked about the wait list, and we'll return to this question of demand in a moment, but at whether or not the voc tech schools are currently actually even educating students in the right way for exactly the kind of jobs that Barry's talking about?
Well, again, there's a lot of variation, and you see different things in different schools, partly based on their economic circumstances. But in general, what we saw was a very high level of success. These are, for the most part, very strong, very high-functioning programs. And the challenge is that kids want to get into them and can't. Now, it should also be said, most of the jobs that Barry is talking about are jobs that still require some additional training or education post-secondary
uh-huh.
school. But the voc schools prepare students extremely well for that and have very good track records for the most part.
Well, as the Boston Globe reported today, they mentioned that, given the waiting list at some of these schools, that the competition is so high to get into them that, in a way, the administration can select the top students who may be most likely to actually go on eventually to college. And so some students, you know, especially in a lot of these communities of need, might be exactly the kind of students who should get in but are being left out.
Yeah, no, this is not basically, schools are not exercising a lot of selection. They are basically taking students on a first-come, first-served basis and then missing out on a lot of others. There's also a real problem that as guidance counselors in the school systems are recognizing the existence of these waiting lists, they're not recommending as many students to even apply to the folks as historically have. So we suspect that the real demand is probably even greater than the wait list.
Barry Bluestone, a quick question to you. Could this have an impact on the competitiveness of Massachusetts businesses here?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, our manufacturers that we surveyed said this is the number one problem they face. We know manufacturers today who are trying to fill positions and can't find them, can't find workers for them. So this either means they don't expand their operations, creating even more income, more wealth for the state, or they sometimes have to even think about, can we go somewhere else where we can find another location where we have an appropriately trained workforce? So you have states like North Carolina that is putting a lot of effort into their community colleges and vocational education. We need to do that here, too.
Listeners, we're talking about the growing demand for vocational technical schools and the skills gap between the students who want to get trained for 21st century manufacturing jobs and the Massachusetts businesses who want to hire them. We're speaking with Peter Enrich. He's a law professor at Northeastern University Law School, and he oversaw a new survey of vocational technical schools around the state. And also with Barry Bluestone. He's founding director of Northeastern's Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy. Gentlemen, if you could just stand by for a second, I want to welcome one more voice into this conversation. Someone who knows this issue from both the perspective of a business owner and an advisor to a Springfield vocational technical school. She's Kate Putnam. She's president of Package Machinery, and she's a member of the advisory board at the Roger Putnam Vocational Technical Academy in Springfield, which, by the way, was named after her grandfather, former mayor of Springfield from many a decade ago. Kate Putnam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let me just ask you about what's happening at the Putnam Voc Tech School in Springfield, because I see here from Northeastern's data that there are more than 300 students on the waiting list there. Why is that?
Well, it's amazing. We've had a groundswell of support for the program, which was restarted about 5 years ago, and there are all new machines in there, and it's just a fabulous facility. It's brand new. We have a shortage of teachers. The qualifications to teach at the high school level are more onerous and restrictive than to teach at the community college level. Mm. And as a result, there's a constant scramble for teachers. If you think about it, a skilled machinist can easily earn, even in this area, $60,000 a year or more. Why on earth would they want to take at least a $10,000 pay cut, perhaps $15,000, to become a teacher, where they would then have to pay and spend a lot of time getting their teacher certification?
Right.
So they're taking a pay cut, and they're not getting reimbursed, but they're going to have to spend time getting the certification. We can't get teachers.
So from what I hear you say, the facilities are there, the space is there, obviously the student demand is there, but because you can't find enough teachers who have these skill sets that they need to teach the students, you can't fill the demand. So would something as simple as, I mean, I say simple, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but as more money from the city or the state solve that problem?
I don't know, because I think there's another thing at work here, which is that in Massachusetts, the gold standard of education is you go to college. And there is, according to, and educators here will know the numbers better than I, 20 to 25% of the population that learn by doing. And they tend to be our skilled blue-collar workers. And so a teaching mechanism that says you're going to sit in a classroom, you're going to do things on a computer, you're going to write, does not play to the skills of people who learn by doing and who need to be active in the doing process. And the teaching of that is also kind of like an apprenticeship to some extent. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can teach basic skills very broadly, but figuring out how to solve a problem is experiential.
Right.
So it's an ongoing learning experience as well.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you also about your opinion from the perspective of a business owner who is possibly, I guess, facing the problem that Barry Bluestone was talking about earlier, that of the retirement of your most skilled workers, you know, maybe any year or decade now. Are you looking at...
My most skilled worker is on borrowed time right now. He's already at an age where he could retire if he so chose. And there's a wealth of knowledge of possible solutions of creativity there that's scary to even contemplate losing.
So, I mean, look around, do you see students who are able to step in to where that employee of yours, the big shoes,
leave? We've lost one or two generations of those skills. And so what we're doing now will create new and different skills, because there is demand for other kinds of skills. I mean, we talk about, you know, assembly line or, you know, type of work, but the reality is that when we speak to our customers, there is a huge issue finding the people to keep existing, for instance, machinery running and running efficiently and thinking about how to get it to run more efficiently.
Right.
And that is, again, as I say, an experiential learning curve. Yes, it requires a certain amount of knowledge, but it's like trying to find a really good plumber these days, mm-hmm. or a really good electrician. We haven't trained them for a while.
Kate, if you could just...
We do need apprenticeships for them.
Yeah. So, Kate, I'm sorry to have interrupted you there, but I just want to ask you to stand by, because we actually have a couple really good callers who want to give us their perspective here. So let's go to Michael, who's calling from South Boston. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
Good. First of all, let me thank you for having this conversation. I think it's so important to us. I have a couple different directions that I come at this conversation from. I graduated from Madison Park High School or Trade School. At the time, it was two different entities. They had the trade school and the high school separated. And I became an electrician. There was obviously some training after high school that I had to finish. I had to work in the field for a few more years. But it's still the same courses that were available to my father, 50 years ago. People think that a lot of the jobs that are available today are all technical and cannot really be covered in a high school atmosphere, but it's so not true. I think there are so many trades that at least you can get your foot in the door at an early age, but the trade schools that I've seen are evaporating. They're antiquated,
yeah.
And I think we need to stay on top of this.
Now, Michael, did I hear you say, I'm looking at some notes here, that you went to Madison Park?
Yes and no. I went to the trade school that is connected with Madison Park.
Okay.
It was incorporated with all of the city high schools, Charlestown, South Boston. You would spend a half day at the trade school and then continue on to your regular courses in the afternoon.
Right. Michael, thank you so much for your call. And I really appreciate you sharing your two cents with us, because Peter Enrich and Barry Bluestone, I mean, Madison Park right now keeps coming up as... Well, a very sad story on a number of fronts. But one of the things that people say is, look, this is a school that wouldn't have been allowed to fall into such disrepair, both sort of in terms of, well, just disrepair in general, in part because of what we keep coming back to, that one of the problems is that the value of a vocational technical education is just not there anymore.
Well, I think it's interesting. I don't... We did recognize in our report what we referred to as the college-centric paradigm that has been dominant in recent years. But one of the interesting things that's happening is, and it's particularly happening in lower-income communities, is more and more students are not buying into that paradigm. They're recognizing their different learning styles. They're looking for different alternatives. That's part of what we're facing. Madison Park is another story. It isn't quite on the program yet.
Right. Barry, I was hearing Kate Putnam very accurately tell us that more money in and of itself for these schools may not be a silver bullet. And it never is the silver bullet. But, Peter Enrich also told us a little earlier that the funding that these schools get is inadequate for the type of education that they're trying to offer their students. So wouldn't more money actually go a long way to filling this gap?
More money certainly would go a long way, but we also need changes in the whole certification program. We've got healthy folks who are on the verge of retirement who have these skills. We should find a way of taking those existing workers who are highly skilled and training them to be able to teach in these vocational schools, and that will fill that gap. We've got the Mass School Building Authority, which has been putting money into high schools and K through 12 schools across the country. And they're now considering how they can put more money into the vocational schools, but assure that the money is going into the programs where occupations are going to be growing.
Uh-huh.
And we're, in fact, at the Dukakis Center completing a study of what the forecasted projections for occupational demand will be across the board, from
right.
farming to manufacturing, by 2020. So money makes a big difference, but we also have to think about that certification of teachers and seeing if we can't use some of our really skilled workers now and turn them into teachers.
Well, I wonder about just the simple supply-demand issue here, because I'm also seeing that according to David Ferreira, executive director of the Massachusetts Association of Vocational Administrators, the state has not built a new freestanding voc tech school in 30 years.
Right.
Although, as Barry said, the school building assistance program is starting to channel some money in this direction. It's just beginning. It's too early to tell whether it's going to be enough, whether it's going to be targeted efficiently.
Right. Well, Kate Putnam, we just got a few seconds to go, and the last thought goes to you, since you were down on the ground facing this problem in multiple directions. If there's one thing that you could tell policymakers at the state level right now about how to help vocational technical schools and the manufacturers who are going to rely on the students coming out of them, what would you say?
I'd say two things. We need an apprenticeship program for post-education, and then we need, as Barry rightly pointed out, we need to find a way to certify people for their life experience rather than make them go back to school and take a pay cut. Those people who are getting close to retirement, who are so skilled, could really make the difference in being able to pass on their learning to the next generation.
Well, that's Kate Putnam. She's president of Package Machinery in Springfield and a member of the advisory board at the Roger Putnam Vocational Technical Academy in Springfield. Kate Putnam, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Peter Enrich, law professor at Northeastern University Law School and the man who oversaw the new survey of Voc Tech schools, thanks so much for joining us as well.
Happy to be here.
And Barry Bluestone, founding director of Northeastern's Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy. Always great to have you, Barry.
A pleasure.
Well, listeners, stay with us because coming up, we'll speak to one of four Boston doctors who is getting on an airplane tonight to head to Liberia to fight the Ebola outbreak there. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.